supporting WHYY Penn Medicine, helping to find new cures for cancer. With life-saving clinical trials and advanced surgical techniques, Penn Medicine is offering more hope for patients everywhere. Learn more at PennMedicine.org/cancer. Penn Medicine, what's next?
Welcome to You Bet Your Garden. I'm your host, Mike McGrath. Coming up later in the show, we will be talking about cicada killer wasps. They are fearsome looking. They're the biggest wasp in many parts of North America. At least the females are. But they're totally harmless to humans. But they're not harmless to cicadas. And both males and females are beneficial. We'll tell you why you should just tolerate their presence this year and how to get them to nest elsewhere next year when we get to the question of the week. In the meantime, it's a phone call show. That means we're taking lots of your fascinating phone call questions, comments, tips, tricks, etc. at 1-888-346-9499. Bo, welcome to You Bet Your Garden.
Hi, Mike. How are you?
I'm doing good, Bo. How are you, sir?
I'm doing great. Thanks for asking.
And where is Bo doing great?
I'm in Oklahoma City, Oklahoma.
Excellent. Excellent. One of the stations that put us on the air right away when we went national. We love being on the air in Oklahoma.
Well, we really enjoy your show here. I know lots of people who listen.
Yes. No, it's a great place for us. What can we do for you, Bo?
Well, I have a 1.5-year-old boxer who likes to be outside during the day. And he also enjoys killing the trees in the backyard.
The way most dogs do?
Well, I'm not sure how. I've never seen a dog do this, but he likes to strip the bark off of our trees.
And then what does he do with it?
He eats it.
He eats
or
it.
Or shreds it.
Right.
He'll pull the branches off and chew on those, too.
Okay.
Now, my question is, we have about 13 trees in the back, and he's killed, I think, 7 of them. But most of them are really young, and we had intended on getting rid of them, so we really didn't think anything about it. But we have a maple tree that is a lot older than the other ones that he had left alone for about 1.5 years. And then I would say maybe a couple of weeks ago, or maybe even 10 days ago, he decided to strip all the bark off of this maple tree, and it's probably about 7 or 8 years old.
Mm-hmm.
And it still looks okay, but it hasn't gotten hot here yet either, and we were wondering if there was anything that we could do to save it.
Well, first of all, has he stripped it in a complete circle around the tree?
Unfortunately, yes, he has at the base of it.
Then the tree will die.
Okay, there's just nothing that we can do.
No, that outer layer is the only thing that can carry nutrients up to the canopy of the tree. Now,
okay.
Now, what you should have done is, after the first couple of trees, you should have just gone out and wrapped the trunks of the remaining trees with chicken wire.
No, you're exactly right, and we had talked about it, but the thing is we most of those trees we were going to have taken out and re-landscape the yard anyway. Because
yes,
really
yes, but you, by not doing so, you have reinforced this bad behavior.
It's true.
You know, you could have trained him passively to stop doing this by the next bark he put his teeth into being chicken wire. That
right.
would be better than doggy obedience school. So, you know, sooner or later, you're going to get tired of buying new trees.
True.
And doggy's going to get a flying lesson. So
yes.
Before that happens, you have to begin training him by putting, just wrapping loosely, not tightly, but
okay.
loose chicken wire around the base of the tree. You could also spray it with a dog or cat repellent or a deer repellent,
okay.
but you'd have to keep respraying it, whereby the chicken wire loose around the bottom of the tree is a perfect defense. And you only have to buy it once. Chicken wire is very cheap. And when the dog is retrained, you can just take it off. But
okay.
have you talked to the vet about this?
No, actually, we haven't. Well, no, I take that back. I think we mentioned it. But again, at the time, you're right. We should have done something about it, but we didn't. he has an older brother that has outgrown it, so we just assumed that he would eventually outgrow it, but he doesn't. He seems to enjoy chewing on wood. So
right. Well, obviously, when that happens, you give the dog dedicated pieces of wood to chew on that are safe for dogs to chew, and you protect the trees. But I also wonder if there's not some nutrient deficiency going on here with the dog that he is trying to counteract, something he's not getting in his diet that is sending him to chew bark. So obviously you have to talk to your vet, find out what's a safe wood for him to chew, wrap your trees in chicken wire, and then, but again, I want to stress, it's a loose wrapping. You don't want to be tight against the tree because that'll do damage.
Yeah. So you can move the room to grow in there.
Right, exactly. You can move the chicken wire around a little bit, but, you know, obviously that won't be a good thing to chew. All right, Bo, sorry about that one tree, but I think you know what to do for the future.
Absolutely. Thank you so much for your time.
All right, you take care, sir.
Bye-bye.
1-888-346-9499. Janice, welcome to You Bet Your Garden.
Thank you for taking my call.
Well, thank you for making it, Janice. That's an unusual name. Where are you, first of all?
I'm calling from Houston, Texas.
Excellent. And where do we get Janice from?
It's actually my grandmother's name.
Really?
So it's named after my grandma, yeah.
Excellent, excellent. I love that tradition. Okay, what can we do for Janice in Texas?
My husband and I are new homeowners, and we just started our garden in January. And everything's growing really well, but just as our tomatoes were starting to bear fruit, I realized that we had planted near an oleander.
Right.
And I have some concerns that, with as toxic as that plant is, that our vegetables and our herbs might be picking up some of that toxin.
I have almost certainly 100% good news for you. Although the oleander itself is a toxic and irritating plant whose sap is a lot like latex, their leaves are very difficult to compost. I can't think of a single plant other than a relatively new invasive called garlic mustard that can harm plants growing near it. And garlic mustard is really just like the roots of a black walnut. It can kill susceptible plants, but plants that survive are totally safe for us to eat. The only caveat I have is if this is a vegetable garden, you really want to try to keep big plants in general away from it. You're in Houston. Your summers are going to be extraordinarily hot and dry. And one of your biggest unseen enemies will be other large plants in the area taking water out from the subsoil and making it harder to keep your wanted vegetable plants watered. So a lot of times when people are looking at problems even growing under trees and they're focusing on shade or they're focusing on some allopathic quality of the tree, they're forgetting that those roots are big bullies that are taking all the food and nutrients out of the soil. Now, are you growing your vegetables in raised beds or flat ground?
Flat ground.
Okay. I want you to think about building raised beds in the off season. You'll be able to use them there in Houston. And what are you doing to keep moisture in the soil?
Well, we have a sprinkler system, so we've programmed that to go off at least once a day. And
that's going to be That's going to be terrible for your plants because if you water them every day, the root systems will stay shallow. And then when your summer hits, which it hits like a sledgehammer, they're not going to have any reserves. The way to water plants, especially in a climate like yours that's going to get very stressful in July and August, is to give the plants a deep soaking for like 6 to 8 hours, ending first thing in the morning, once a week during normal times, and maybe for 4 to 6 hours twice a week during dry times. But don't dare water them every day, or it's counterintuitive, but you'll lose your plants to drought from that. What do you have on the surface of the soil to keep the moisture in there?
Just soil.
Okay, you need a mulch on top. You need a cooling mulch. Okay. Where you are, they sell bagged pine straw, I believe.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, so you want to go buy a couple of bags of pine straw. I know shredded leaves are not the easiest thing to find once you start to get that far south, but if you have deciduous trees, you should start saving the leaves. You may want to buy a bale of straw, make sure it's not hay, but don't put wood mulch or anything like that on. Where you are, they might have bagged pecan hulls or other seed and nut and hull mulches. They're all fabulous, but you need something on the surface of the soil because your plants are going to be stressed in summer, and you want to keep that moisture in the soil for them.
Is there a particular time of the day where I should do this 6 to 8 hour watering?
You should start in like the middle of the night, and it should end just as the sun is coming up. That's the ideal time for the plants to get the most water. And obviously the mulch is going to conserve water, which might be expensive where you are in the summertime.
I just do that once a week and I should be good to go.
Yes, and if you see the plants need a little bit more, you can do it twice a week when it's 100 degrees every day. Never every day. No one should water every day.
Okay. Thank you so much. I appreciate all the information.
All right. Good luck. Enjoy your great adventure.
Thank you.
Bye-bye. Well, it's time for me to take a little break and remind everybody who's putting plants like tomatoes, peppers, cukes, squash, and melons in the ground that evening planting is much better than early morning. There's always some transplant shock when a plant goes in the ground, but if you wait until the evening, the plant can get nicely settled overnight before it has to spend its first day broiling in the sun. Ah, but don't you go dragging your love apples back inside just yet, because we'll be right back with more of your fabulous phone calls and why you should not fear the cicada killer wasp. Unless you're a cicada, of course. I'm Mike McGrath, and this is You Bet Your Garden.
Moss Acres supports You Bet Your Garden. Moss is a low-maintenance solution for shady spots where grass doesn't like to grow. Moss Acres offers information and a variety of mosses online at mossacres.com.
You're listening to WHYY.
Jenkins Arboretum supports WHYY. Jenkins Arboretum, a 46-acre garden located in Devon, is open to the public at no charge, 365 days a year from 8 a.m. to sunset. Jenkins Arboretum is currently featuring an outdoor sculpture exhibition entitled Wind Through the Trees, with 49 sculptures in a botanical setting. Visitors can stroll through the garden and enjoy their spring bloom festival, including a collection of rhododendrons and azaleas. Details at JenkinsArboretum.org.
Medford Lees proudly supports WHYY, a Quaker-related, not-for-profit community celebrating 40 years of service. Medford Lees offers two campuses in Medford and Lumberton, New Jersey, featuring arboretum settings, residential home designs ranging from townhouses to garden-style apartments, varied contract options, a self-governing residence association, and comprehensive on-site wellness and health services. Further details at 800-331-4302 or MedfordLees.org.
Welcome back to You Bet Your Garden. I'm your host, Mike McGrath. Coming up later in the show, the cicada-killing wasp is a real wonder of nature. The female of the species is one of the biggest wasps in North America. They are like spring bulbs in that they're only above ground and active for a couple of months out of the year. They spend most of their life underground, and they terrify people. Luckily, for no good reason. We'll explain why you don't need to be scared of these big wonders and what you can do to get them out of your lawn safely when we get to the question of the week. In the meantime, more of your fascinating phone calls at 1-888-346-9499. Gary, welcome to You Bet Your Garden.
Hey, Mike, how you doing?
I'm doing well today, sir. How are you?
Very well. I'm in Westchester, Pennsylvania.
Very good. A very nice gardening community not far outside of Philadelphia.
That's right.
All right. What can we do for Gary in Westchester?
Well, I have a neighbor who started raspberries about 3 years ago.
And let me guess. Let me guess. Now you have raspberries, too.
Oh, yes. Oh, yes. But it's worse than that. A year after he started, I planted an asparagus patch in a raised bed, 10, 15 feet away from his raspberries.
Oh, excellent. Excellent.
Yes,
Do you sell tickets? Do you sell tickets? This is This is Ali.
If they would only make a salad, I could just pick them all at one time.
Oh, man. No, this is Ali Frazier. You got two aggressive underground plants that you never know where they're going to send up the next popper above ground. This is like the Rumble in the Jungle, except it's in Westchester.
I don't know whether just continuing to nip the buds off the berry canes will eventually knock them out, or am I doomed?
You're doomed.
Doomed, good.
Doomed. The answer there would be doomed. Now, what you want to do, if you want to continue to grow asparagus in that spot, is you have to dig a trench behind your asparagus on the raspberry side.
Right.
And you need to put down a rhizome barrier or edging that will need to be fairly deep. Raspberries have superpowers. Raspberries can travel underground and overground very efficiently. But this can be done. And then once you get that established, which you're going to need unless you just want your backyard to be turned into a raspberry patch, which is far from second prize for most people.
That's right. That's right. I appreciate everything my neighbor did.
And then what you would do is you would allow the raspberries that are intermingled in your asparagus, you would essentially leave them alone. You would let them fruit, leave the canes in place, and then when they fruit for the second year, those canes will be dead. So if you leave them alone and pull up new sprouts the following spring, you must remove the entire sprout, but the new ones that come up, if you soak the soil well and pull slowly and gently, you can get the whole root system out. Sometimes you'll get four or five together because they're all a lot of them are combined to one centralized root. After 2 years, the canes are dead. That's one of the reasons they spread so aggressively is the next generation is always on the march. And a lot of times, the place where you planted raspberries becomes barren after a while because the raspberries, for one reason or another, either towards water or towards sun, are only marching in one direction. And in my raspberry bed, for instance, I've had to, every 5 or 6 years, take all the new sprouts that are coming up in my garden, in my raised beds, and move them back to where I want raspberries. And they're generally pretty good-natured about that.
Right.
But
I couldn't get down and dig out the roots because I would tear up my asparagus patch.
Right. What you want to do is you want to soak the soil really well, and then when the new green sprouts are about a foot high, it's soaking wet soil. Tug gently, and the root system will come up. You don't want to dig because you are correct. You will damage your crowns. You could try to let them coexist. It's going to be nasty in a couple of years. But, you know, that's your two choices. You put in the trench, and you can then remove the raspberries from your property. Or if you want to try to get too clever for words, you can always try to dig up the crowns and replant them someplace else and just let the raspberries come in. But be warned that the raspberries will never stop without a barrier.
That's my concern. They're just going to keep going through my whole garden.
Correct.
If I don't stop them at some point.
Right.
How deep will that trench have to be?
Boy, I'm not even going to guess. I'd like you to look at a few online resources, but I would think a good foot and a half below the soil line with a little lip above the soil line.
All right. Well, thank you very much, Mike. We'll give it a shot.
All right. Good luck, Gary.
Thank you.
1-888-346-9499. Barbara, welcome to You Bet Your Garden.
Thank you, Mike. Glad to be with you.
I am pleased to have you with me, Barb. Where are you?
I'm in Bristol, Tennessee.
The Tri-Cities area, one of my favorite places. I've visited there several times, which is always good because it means I know your climate.
Yes.
What can we do for Barbara in Bristol, Tennessee?
Okay. I'm the pastor of a church, and we're wanting to start a community garden in our church's backyard to help serve the neighbors in our community. who might need some food this summer. And also we're using it as an educational experience for our children to learn about earth stewardship, which vegetables would be the best to grow, for our area, and also that would be easy to care for, considering the fact that children would be helping us with this garden.
Now, the typical community garden model is that each person is responsible for a plot or two, and they can grow whatever they want in it. One of the terms of many community gardens, however, is that 10 to 20 to 50% of what you grow will go to the local food bank. So ownership can be everything. And if these people who need food help are also unemployed, having a garden in the summertime can be a great use of their time, a great way to get back on schedule, to have a place to go to have responsibilities. Have you floated that idea to see if, for instance, you can follow the traditional model? Because I tell you, what you're setting yourself up for right now is a crushing amount of work with many pitfalls, whereby if you build a typical community garden and people take ownership of the plots, your benefits have increased greatly and your need for antidepressants will have dropped dramatically. Do you have a food bank in the church already, a place where people donate food and then people who are needy in the community come?
Only canned items.
Yes. Yeah, that's what I'm talking about, because that's what my church does. Every time I go shopping, I do a little bit of shopping for them on the side and drop off a bag of Cheerios and Campbell's soup.
Right.
So you already have this?
Yes.
So you have clients?
Yes.
Have you asked them what they would like to have grown?
We're just organizing it, so we're in that process right
now. Are you going to grow in raised beds?
We're going to use raised beds, yes.
Are they built?
I have a gentleman working on the slats, wooden slats right now.
Okay, they're not toxic wood slats, are they?
No.
Okay, good. No. I would immediately poll the people who make use of your resources on two things. First, we're going to grow some food out in back of the church. What do you like? Because you're at the confluence of people who would typically go for tomatoes and peppers and cucumbers with people who would also crave more southern food like collard greens and black-eyed peas and things like that. So as any good small-scale farmer would do, you don't plant anything by instinct. You pre-sell it. You say to the people, what do you want? And you give them a big list of all the options. Sit down with some of those gardeners. And because God forbid you grow 100 pounds of kohlrabi and the kids just wind up drawing Native American faces on them for Thanksgiving. So you should not be trying to do this all yourself, nor should you be trying to figure it out. You have your clientele built in. Even if other people will be making use of it, there'll probably be a good representative pool of what people in your community eat as fresh food, which may not be what you eat or may not be what you would instinctively plant. But the second thing, and you know, maybe I would even make it first, is we're going to be building a food garden in back of the church. Would you like to help, or would you like a plot of your own that will have your name on it, like community gardens all around the country? And when they come to tend this garden, there's every opportunity to reach out to them about how they're doing at home, how their stress levels are, how's the job search going. And they've got responsibility. Now, obviously, if these are the working poor who are already working two jobs, they're not making it, absolutely, we must grow for them. But if they're unemployed and they're kind of lost and they've gotten off a schedule, this garden could be a real lifesaver. You can really get back on track with taking care of a garden over the summer. And then it may seem foolish, but then when you go for that first real important job interview in the fall, what did you do over the summer? Well, I tended these like five big plots out in back of the church, and we were growing food for me and for people like me who are having a hard time making ends meet. And if I were the recruiter, I'd sit back and go, oh, okay, so you're staying active. You got your head in the game. You show up every day. I like that.
Team player, too,
yeah. Yeah. So try to make it a real community garden. The more individual families in your area take ownership of these plots, the better a result you're going to get. Because shared responsibility, group responsibility, that's another phrase for, or that's the reason everything looks so disorganized and nothing's getting done well. And it's much easier for individuals to take care of a small plot on their own than for a couple of people to just get absolutely exhausted by the beginning of August because they're tending to their own gardens, they're coming to this other garden where nobody's showing up, and then just grow what they want. Be like a good small-scale farmer. Ask them what they want up front, and that's what you grow.
Okay.
But don't do everything yourself, and cut your workload in half, cut your plans in half right away. Think of this as a five-year project.
Okay, great.
All right, Barb?
All right. I'll let you know about our success.
Good. I want to hear about it.
Thank you for your help. Appreciate it.
All right. You take care.
You too, Mike. Thanks. Bye-bye.
1-888-346-9499. Bob, welcome to You Bet Your Garden.
Hi, Mike. How are you?
I am doing very well today, Bob. How are you, sir?
I'm doing good.
And where is Bob doing good?
Norristown, Pennsylvania.
All right, very good. What can we do for Bob just outside of Philadelphia?
Yeah, I have a very small vegetable garden, 8 feet by 4 feet, and last year the tomatoes were doing good. I had like 5 or 6 tomato plants, and they were doing good up until the end of July, and they started to die off. And I talked to a fellow that I grew up with that has a greenhouse, and he thinks that I have to remove the soil and get new soil and put it in there because something's wrong with the soil. Is there anything I can do other than that?
Now, that is a very small garden. That's the size of one of my raised beds.
Yes.
Have you been growing tomatoes in that exact same spot for years now?
2 or 3 years, I have.
Okay, so you're right at the time. There is something weird about tomatoes that when they grow in the same spot the second year, they begin to build up a wilt in the soil around their roots. In cool climes, it's verticillium wilt. As we move further south, it tends to be more fusarium wilt. But they act exactly the same. It builds up year after year. By the third year, what used to be a little yellowing of the lowest leaves on the tomato plant moves up rapidly. And typically somewhere between year 3 and 5, the plants just die halfway through the season. It's nothing you're doing wrong other than growing the tomatoes in the same spot year after year. Now, is this a raised bed or is it flat ground?
Flat ground.
Okay. You probably want to look at building a raised bed. 4x8 is the perfect size for a raised bed. You'll get more out of it.
Okay.
But the really bad news is you have to grow your tomatoes someplace else this year.
Okay. All right.
And do you have that option?
Not really. This is the only spot because there's a couple maple trees that take a lot of sun away towards the end of the day.
Is there a community garden nearby?
There is, but I tried that 1 year, and there's no access to water. I had to bring my own water, and you know what that must be like.
Actually, you can really reduce that need, Bob, by growing in raised beds and having a nice mulch on the surface of the soil.
Okay.
Yeah. See, you're limiting your results by being a flat grounder to begin with. Okay, so your big option then, if you don't want to go in the community garden, and if you can get a plot there, I think you'd be really foolish, because if you can get a plot where tomatoes weren't grown, you can give your soil a rest of at least a year and have your tomatoes and eat them too without going to a lot of trouble.
Oh, good.
Your other option would be to get a bunch of big containers and put those someplace else that you get some sun, use that 4x8 area, which I would really urge you to frame off and fill with nice compost and topsoil first. You could use that area for something else this year. And if you could let it go for 2 years, then you'd have a free year of growing tomatoes in the soil again.
All right, that sounds good.
But I tell you, if it's no fault, why don't you take a bed in the community garden, put a couple of tomato plants in there, mulch the surface well with pine straw, straw, shredded leaves, compost, whatever non-wood mulch you can come up with, keep the moisture in the soil, and who knows, we might get enough rain that you'll only haul water up there once or twice, and maybe you can make a deal with somebody or get a screened bucket or two and have it in your plots during rainstorms, screening so mosquitoes don't breed in it. And then, you know, put it in the shade somewhere with the screening on, and, you know, if it's been dry for 10 days, you pour that water on them.
Okay.
All right.
It's been a pleasure. Thank you very much.
Oh, thank you, Bob. You take care now. Good luck this season.
Thank you. Bye now.
Well, it's time for me to take a little break and remind hopeful tomato growers not to put their plants in the same spots as tomatoes grew last year, to bury most of the tomato stem underground, and to add some form of calcium to prevent blossom end rot. You can put a dozen crushed eggshells in each hole, water the plants with dissolved calcium carbonate tablets, or use a natural tomato food that contains calcium. But don't go looking for all the details at the Garden Answers A to Z section of our website just yet, because we'll be right back with more of your fabulous phone calls and what to do when cicada-killing wasps take up residence in your front yard. I'm Mike McGrath, and this is You Bet Your Garden.
It's 11:38. You're listening to WHYY.
Mike McGrath, right back at you with local events. The Tamanen Park Garden Club plant sale at Tamanen Park in Southampton, PA, runs until 3 p.m. today and from 9 to 3 tomorrow. The Scott Arboretum of Swarthmore College will host a sale of unusual annuals and tropicals that's open to the public next Saturday, the 21st, from noon to 3, and Sunday, May 22nd, from 10 to 2. The Wick Historic House and Garden in Germantown will host their annual Old Rose Symposium next Saturday from 9 to 4. And the Garden Club of Allentown, New Jersey will hold their Hidden Garden Tour on Saturday, June 4th from 9 to 2. We'll post all the details at the events section of our website, youbetyourgarden.org.
Hey, if you know a teen who's interested in video production, WHYY is offering two hands-on experiences this summer, the Young Journalist Summer Camp for Teen Reporters and the WHYY Film Academy for Young Filmmakers. For more information, call us at 215-351-3318 or visit whyy.org/Hamilton Commons.
Moss Acres supports You Bet Your Garden. Moss is a low-maintenance solution for shady spots where grass doesn't like to grow. Moss Acres offers information and a variety of mosses online at mossacres.com.
Welcome back to You Bet Your Garden. I'm your host, Mike McGrath, and we're in the stretch now, cats and kittens. In just a little bit, we'll get to the question of the week, which is on cicada-killing wasps. The female is one of the largest wasps in North America. She's really fearsome-looking. They like to nest near humans, and they're absolutely harmless. Unless you're a cicada, of course. We'll explain the good things they do, the bad things they don't, and how you can gently urge them to build their nests elsewhere in the future, right after a couple more of your fascinating phone calls at 1-888-346-9499. Anne, welcome to You Bet Your Garden.
Hey, thank you. Love your show, Mike, and appreciate you taking my call.
Well, thank you for making it, Anne. Where are you?
I am in northern Michigan. We're just outside Traverse City, which is sort of orchard country.
Right.
Near the Big Lake.
What can we do for you, Ann?
You can help me in a little dispute with my husband. We have a little disagreement on how to handle what I think are some invasives in our front flower bed.
Okay.
we built this flower bed when we first moved into this house about 3 years ago now, and it was very raw. I wanted to vegetate it quickly. And there was a lot of variegated vinca growing around the property, and we put that in. My husband put that in liberally, and I think it's becoming a problem now, overgrowing other things and sort of just becoming a mat of vines on the surface. Plus, we brought in some plants from our old house, and along with those good plants, the desirable plants, some bishop's weed crept in.
Oh, so isn't it funny how most of these invasive weed problems are, like, your fault, you know?
Yeah, yeah. And then we had some friends give us some grass. It's I don't know what kind of grass, but it's a variegated grass, and it's going crazy, too. And I guess my big question to you is, Do we rip these out with vigor, or do we let them stay there? My husband's theory is they'll make a nice ground cover through which our other perennials will grow, but I don't know that that's right.
Well, obviously, the bishop's weed needs to be taken care of. Anytime you see that, you got to soak the ground, you got to pull it out. The variegated grass, I presume this is an ornamental grass that turned
Correct.
Out to be an unruly one for your area?
Correct. Yeah.
You know, if you can't keep it under control, that's going to have to go.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I have vinca growing in a bed that also has a peach tree, a rose, a couple of old tulips that must be 35 years old. They predate my ownership of the house that's fight their way through every year. And a lilac, which, of course, is the drama queen of the garden.
And it sounds lovely.
Oh, well, it is. And the vinca actually works as a nice living ground cover. In that case, your husband is correct. But it will spread. So what you want to do is surround this bed with good deep edging so you can make a demarcation line where you know you don't want the vinca to go out of. And then all I do is a couple of times a season, I just go out there and I just literally rip out the vinca that's encroaching near the peach tree, the rose, and especially the lilac. If I let a single leaf of vinca touch the lilac, it calls the police. It calls the Red Cross for blankets and lawyers. Oh, nobody's taking care of me. But they are plants that need a lot of airflow that can't tolerate anything else growing at their base.
So I just need to keep those that vinca under control and remove the bishop's weed.
Absolutely.
And we'll sort of, I'll make the variegated grass behave. And if it doesn't do that, I'll maybe wage some more on that too.
Yeah, and if you see it getting out of control, pull it up pretty quickly because it you'll still be battling it for another season or two to come. So better to decide that early than late.
Hey, thanks so much. It was great talking with you. I appreciate all the information.
You were a lot of fun. Thank you.
Bye-bye.
1-888-346-9499. Joe, welcome to You Bet Your Garden.
Hi, how you doing?
I'm doing good, Joe. How are you, sir?
Good. I'm calling you from Asbury Park, New Jersey, and I have two questions for you.
Well, I have a question for you.
Yes.
Isn't it amazing how your boardwalk has come back and is just such a wonderful, delightful place again?
A big change. The town still's got a ways to go, but it's definitely on its way.
I have been going to Asbury Park for a lot of years. Friends of mine have a house in Ocean Grove, the community next door. Mm-hmm. And I guess it was 2 years ago that we were there on a very warm spring day. And the haunted Hojo's has turned into a classy restaurant. I mean, it's a delightful place. I always love to see these areas come back. Congratulations to your town,
Thanks.
All right, what are your questions?
Okay, first question is, I have lilacs in my backyard. They're about 7 feet high. And about 3-4 years ago, I had wood-boring insects in them. And they made a series of holes a couple feet up the trunk before I got the correct stuff and treated it and killed them off. But I still have those holes. And I'm wondering, should I just leave them, or is there something I could caulk it up with or patch up those holes? What's the best way to go about it?
And what's your second question?
I know that they changed the lineups on Sirius Satellite, and I want to know what the new channel number for your show is.
Oh, they changed it?
Yes.
I did not know that. They didn't tell us. I know, well, it's we're still on NPR Talk, which used to be Channel 135. But I imagine you'd have to go online, just like I will when I get home. But you're the first person to tell me that the numbers change, so I will look that up.
Okay, great.
Now, lilacs, my lilacs are in full bloom right now. How do Joe's look?
They're pretty good. They're about half bloom.
And but they leaf out nicely. They got gorgeous flowers.
Yes.
Anytime there's an issue with a plant, that's what I want the gardener to focus on. Mm-hmm. If it leafs out and if a drama queen like a lilac is blooming well for you, then there are no problems.
Okay, one of them is a little iffy. The other two of them are doing good. One's not so happy.
Is it getting sun? Does it have its base cleared?
Yep.
Does it have a lot of exposure?
Mm-hmm.
And what's wrong with it?
There's barely any blooms and not a lot of leaves. Yeah.
Okay. Well, do you feed your lilacs?
Yes.
What do you feed them?
Just basic chicken and dry chicken manure, a little bit of that like once a year, and then just some basic fertilizer and compost.
Okay. Well, you are one of the problems. By basic fertilizer, I think you're probably dancing around chemical fertilizer, so I don't yell at you. Lilacs are very vulnerable to chemical fertilizers. They, like I said, they are drama queens. They really want a rich, nutritious, well-draining soil. So compost alone is what they want. Never put chicken or horse manure on in any form on a flowering plant.
Oh, okay.
Those manures are just nitrogen, essentially. They are overwhelmingly nitrogen. Chicken manure is the highest nitrogen of all the barnyard manures. That will give you bigger plants, but it will inhibit flowering. No more chemical fertilizer. And there's no wood mulch around the base of these plants, is there?
Yes.
Oh, man.
No, sorry. No, there was last year, and I replaced that area with stone.
Okay. Well, your instincts are not necessarily the ones to follow here, Joe.
Okay.
So I would get rid of the stone.
Okay.
I would not go back to the wood mulch. I would find a good source of high-quality compost. There's a lot of big independent nurseries near you. And make sure that all your lilacs have a nice 1 to 2 inch mulch of compost at their base, and that the bases are clear of anything else, and there's nothing blocking their airflow, that they're all getting good sun. No more chemical fertilizer, no more manures, and the holes are not a problem. I know people want to fill them in with wound sealer, but in truth, nature has already healed those wounds internally. And anything you put in there will not grow at the same rate as the plant. So you can only do harm, not good. And when your lilacs are done blooming for the year, I want you to clip off the dead flowers pretty promptly. And that's when you want to lay down this compost. That's when you want to keep them well watered, because that's when the plant is going to start building strength for its blooming next year. And I would not be surprised if sick little Willie doesn't turn around and look as good as the other ones.
Okay, great.
All right, man?
Great. Thank you very much for all your help.
All right. Well, you got to do something for me, though.
Yes.
As soon as it opens again, you got to go down to the Silver Ball Arcade on the boardwalk and play a couple of games.
Way ahead of you. I was there this weekend.
Oh, I'm so jealous. My producer tells me that NPR Talk has simply moved to channel 123 on Sirius.
Oh, great. Okay, 123.
So she looked it up for you.
Okay.
All right, go rattle that arcade some more, young man.
I will, definitely.
All right.
Bye, Mike. Thanks a lot.
You take care, Joe. All right, as promised, it's time for the question of the week. Cicada-killing wasps are harmless, unless you're a cicada. Will in Jessup, Maryland starts us off by going, I have a cicada killer wasp problem in the summertime. The wasps always emerge from the same general area in the lawn, which happens to be adjacent to my pool. So the situation is quite problematic. Although I must admit that nobody's ever been stung by them, and they aren't aggressive. I'm turning to you for help before they emerge this season. Amy in Delaware County, PA, writes, every summer, annoying, large cicada killer wasps swarm in my front yard, digging holes all over and scaring people. I've tried wasp sprays and 7-powder in the holes, but they won't be deterred. I'm thinking of calling in a professional pest control company. Well, of course, the first thing I did when I got Amy's email was to yell at her for turning her front yard into a toxic waste dump to try and destroy a non-stinging wonder of nature. Her reply? I agree that these chemicals aren't good for people. Unfortunately, we have kids, pets, neighbors, friends, babysitters, and postal workers who are scared of the wasps. They make it impossible to use our front yard for 2 months of the summer. Now, I realize I'm more stridently against garden chemicals than most, but emails like Amy's make my heart sink. She'll let her kids and pets play on a toxic and dangerous lawn rather than try and educate people that although, yes, they do look kind of fearsome, these wondrous wasps are 100% harmless and even a little beneficial. Instead of more chemicals, how about installing nice big signs that say something like, these wasps do not sting? Although I'd prefer something more along the lines of, just leave them alone, they live here too. Now, I'm no Orthodox Buddhist. If you click on our previous questions of the week about yellow jackets, fleas, ticks, and mosquitoes, you will be presented with control options that are deadly to the dangerous creature named. Just not deadly to humans, pets, and the environment. Pests that spread disease or sting aggressively should not be tolerated, and I got no touchy-feely attitudes towards them. But, like the numerous ground-nesting native bees that many of you are frightened of right now, these big wasps of summer are harmless. The males have no stingers. Females do have stingers, but don't want to waste it on you. Those paralyzing punches are reserved for unlucky cicadas. The female cicada-killing wasp is a real wonder of nature, one of the hardest-working women in the show business of the natural world. She'll find a cicada in a tree and sting it into paralysis. If she is lucky, the cicada will stay put. If she is not, and the cicada drops to the ground, she has to fly down, take a hold of it, and drag it back up the tree. Now, this is hard work. The females are one of the largest wasps in North America, but cicadas are much bigger. She makes this arduous climb because she needs that height to be able to clumsily fly her heavy prey to a previously prepared and highly intricate burrow she has dug out of the soil, drop the cicada in, and deposit an egg or three on the unlucky creature. The wasp babies hatch and consume the cicada, then each spins a cocoon and passes the fall, winter, and spring underground, emerging the next summer so that females can once again do all the heavy lifting while the smaller males eat pollen and have sex with the females. Not the worst species for a guy. They are beneficial insects. The females protect young fruit trees by keeping the cicada population in check, and the males pollinate flowers. And 10 years worth of frightened emails about them from listeners and every research article I could find says the same thing. Everybody gets scared, but nobody ever gets stung, except cicadas. Oh, there's one other common thread in all those emails. Whether it's a homeowner or a pest control company applying the poisons, the wasps are unaffected. Now, to try and get them to nest elsewhere, allow this season's brood to emerge, and then put a heavy mulch over the area if it's bare ground, or spray a garlic oil-based insect repellent heavily on the turf if they're in a lawn. Sold for protection of crops and as non-toxic backyard mosquito foggers, these garlic sprays are felt to be the most effective overall insect repellent. Then, if they are nesting in the lawn, build up that lawn. Female wasps look for bare ground, bare spots, or really thin and ratty lawns. Like female Japanese beetles, they don't want to have to work hard to dig through 3 inches of tough turf. If you have a cool season grass, bluegrass, rye, or fescue, that means never cutting it below 3 inches, never cutting it during a dry summer heat wave, and never ever feeding it in the summer. If the lawn needs reseeding or overseeding, wait for the magic window of August 15th to September 15th, give it a big compost feeding, spread the new seed into the compost, and water gently every day until the grass comes up, which will be fast in late summer, the only sensible time of year to sow a cool season lawn by seed. As with weeds, the best cure for insects burrowing in a lawn is indirect. Build up the lawn, mulch any bare soil, and these hard-working wonders of nature will simply dig elsewhere. Well, that sure was some good information on cicada killer wasps now, wasn't it? Luckily for yous, the print version of this and every question of the week appears at the Gardens Alive website. Just click the link at our website, youbetyourgarden.org. Yikes! My producer is threatening to spray me with garlic oil if I don't get out of this studio. We must be out of time. But you can call us anytime at 1-888-346-9499 or send us your email, your tired, your poor, your wretched refuse teeming towards our garden shore at garden@whyy.org. Please tell us where you live. You're getting even worse at that. Put the actual subject in the subject line and check first to see if the information you seek is already waiting for you at our website, youbetyourgarden.org, where you can click through to the question of the week. Find the solution to hundreds of garden problems, hint, hint, just like yours, hint, hint, in our alphabetized archive of garden answers. And or listen to this show, listen to old shows, and or download this week's podcast. Elizabeth Perez Luna is executive producer of audio content for WHYY. Ken Queter plays our theme song. Our engineer this week has been Kevin Love Train Griffin. Our webmasters are Richard the Lionhearted Banowitz and Sarah the She-Devil Kazar. Our big beneficial is Jessica Mandick. The only woman who works harder than a cicada killer, Alexis Landis, produces You Bet Your Garden for WHYY-FM in Philadelphia. Our dirt-digging editor is Al Banks. I'm your host, Mike McGrath. Then, you know, I'm just going to buzz around, dine on pollen and nectar, and wait to have you know what until it's time to see you again next week. It's the time of year when many homeowners begin to wage war on weeds and gravel paths and driveways. I'm Mike McGrath, and on the next thrilling episode of You Bet Your Garden, I'll suggest a simple time and money saving solution that'll give you your summer back, plus your fabulous phone calls.
If you have questions about calendula, camellia, cornstalks, or crabgrass, Mike.